All right, let's start. Welcome, everybody. So we're finishing decades. We have 75 minutes. We're going to be talking about SQL Server high availability and disaster recovery involving Windows Azure. So today, we're going to be focusing a lot into the cloud and how we can use high availability for SQL Server when we're running already in the cloud, or if you're still running on-premise and you're planning to do that for many years, how can you use the cloud to protect against failures and disasters? Just to start, my name is Luis Vargas. I'm a program manager lead on the SQL Server team. I work on a couple of areas. I work on high availability, so anything involving always on, or database mirroring, SQL clusters, that's part of what we do in the team. And also, as part of the team, we work on running SQL Server in Windows Azure Virtual Machines, right? So just to make sure everybody's on the same page, today we're going to be talking about Windows Azure Virtual Machines. That is what we know as infrastructure as a service, right? This is different from what we called before SQL Azure or Windows Azure Database. That is the platform as a service offering. So just making sure that everybody's clear, we're going to be talking about Windows Azure Virtual Machines, and how we can run SQL Server in those virtual machines. So is that clear, everybody? Yep. All right, so how many of you have been using Windows Azure Virtual Machines over the past months? Some of you? Good. All right. How many of you have SQL Server running in Windows Azure Virtual Machines? Like around 40% of the audience. Okay. So let me go very quick overview for the people who don't have the context. So with, by the way, we call it Microsoft Azure Virtual Machine. So I'm still trying to get used to the name. We call it Windows Azure before. It's now Microsoft Azure. So if I say the name, forgive me. So Microsoft Azure Virtual Machines, this means virtual machines that are hosted in the Microsoft Cloud, right? You can provision these virtual machines out of the images that Microsoft provides. So we have many different images with different products installed already. You can use those, or you can create your own images on-premise. You can create VHDs, right, like sysprep them, for example, and then upload those images to the cloud and then provision virtual machines out of those. Provisioning is fast. It's around 10 minutes right now. We're trying to improve that, get into 6-8 minutes at some point. You only pay for what you used, so you pay per minute for that virtual machine. And the cost of how much you pay depends on the size of the machine. So we have different sizes, right? And depending on the size, you get different amounts of memory, a different number of cores, and different number of disks that you can attach to the virtual machine, and also on the licensing, right? So running, for example, SQL Enterprise is more expensive than SQL Standard, and SQL Standard is more expensive than SQL Web, for example. In terms of network, you only pay for outgoing traffic, so any traffic that goes into the cloud is free, right? And in terms of storage, you only pay for what you use. So if you allocate, for example, a couple of terabytes of drives, you only pay for whatever you use. So if your database is 500 megabytes, for example, you only pay for that, right? In terms of elasticity, we have many different sizes of virtual machines. We go from extra small, which is 1 core and 2 gigabytes of RAM, to all the way to 8 cores and 56 gigabytes of RAM. And we support up to 16 terabytes of data. That's what we have today. Right? We just released larger VM sizes. Now we have 16 cores and 112 gigabytes of RAM as well. And we'll continue introducing new VM sizes as time progresses. By the way, if there is any questions, just feel free to raise your hand. We have a small group, so feel free to ask questions. You know, the main thing is make sure that all the concepts and all the scenarios that we talk about are well understood, so feel free to ask. In terms of storage, every virtual machine that has some disks, those disks live in what is called Windows Azure Storage. And basically, it's just a storage infrastructure where we have lots and lots of drives, and through software, we ensure that every copy of that disk has 3 copies. And then we maintain these 3 copies. So every time that you go and write into that disk, we have 3 copies. We actually have a quorum-based mechanism to ensure that at least 2 out of those 3 have whatever change you do, right? And the third one has an asynchronous process that eventually catches up. But the idea here is that we always have at least 2 out of 3 copies that are available. So if for some reason one of these drives goes bad, we will detect that, right? We have some checksum mechanisms, and then we will go and automatically reroute to one of the other copies. And all of this is transparent from the VM perspective. So if you're running SQL Server, for example, for some reason, one of the drives that is hosting your MDF or LDF goes bad, then Windows Azure will automatically route that to a different copy of the drive, right, without you having to do any work. If you select an option called geo-replication, right, you can go into the Windows Azure portal and say, I want geo-replication for my storage. Windows Azure will maintain three more copies in a different data center, right? And this is to protect against disasters in the case of the full Windows Azure data center going down. So for example, if you have your data in East US, right, and you select geo-replication, you have three copies of all your data also living in West US, right? And this is to ensure that there is a disaster replication solution. In terms of high availability, what is the general approach that you can follow in Microsoft Azure VM? So what we have here is just one rack, right? In the rack, you have the Tor, the top of rack, where all the connections, power, go into, and then you have multiple machines, physical machines. Each of these physical machines can host multiple VMs. How many? Depending on the size of the VMs, right? Now, let's say that in the data center, we have many of these, right? We have many, many racks in each data center. And Windows Azure has this concept called availability set, right? Not to be confused with SQL Server availability groups. We tend to come with similar names in Microsoft, but let's explain this one. So this is a Windows Azure concept. And if you put two or more virtual machines in the same availability set, Windows Azure will guarantee that these virtual machines end in different racks. Right? And this is to ensure that if for some reason one of these racks becomes unavailable, for example, because it loses power, you still have one or more virtual machines in different racks. And then what you can do is you can have a load balancer, right, in Windows Azure, and that load balancer continuously probes these virtual machines, right, and it's asking them continuously, are you alive, are you alive, are you alive? If at some point there is a failure, right, then all the connections will go into the remaining virtual machines in the availability set. Does that make sense? Yep. So the general approach, this is how it works for stateless applications, right, where it doesn't matter which of the copies of the virtual machine receives the request. It's a little bit different in the case of a stateful applications like SQL Server, where you have only one primary, which contains all the data. But the principle of having a load balancer mapping to or routing connections to the available replicas still holds. And we'll talk a little bit more in detail later when we look into SQL Server. All right. Once you have your virtual machines there running with SQL Server in the cloud, there are different ways how you can connect your applications. You can connect them over the internet. So you can go and create public endpoints. You have a public DNS name for all of those virtual machines, and then you can connect over the internet, or you can create a site-to-site VPN tunnel, right? And this site-to-site VPN tunnel allows you to extend your network, the network that you have in your corporate environment, into Windows Azure. And once you set up the tunnel, basically all those virtual machines in Windows Azure look like on-premise machines. You can ping them, you can add them to your on-premise domain. You can use Windows Authentication, for example. So if you're using Windows Authentication today to authenticate against SQL on-premise, you can use that against those virtual machines in the cloud. Right. And this tunnel is, in fact, required for disaster recovery in Windows Azure. So if you want to have disaster recovery from on-premise into Windows Azure, you will actually need to set up the tunnel. So we'll look into more detail in the demo here. You can set up this tunnel in different ways. You can ask your network administrator, for example, to go and configure it on the physical VPN device. So if you have a Cisco router, for example, you can configure that. Or you can do this through Windows Server routing services. So in Windows Server 2012, you can go and do it, right? OK, going into SQL Server. So we have many images today available. So we released a few months back the SQL 2014 RTM version in Windows 2012 R2. We also have 2012 SP1. SP2 is coming soon, right? Running in Windows 2012. And we have 2008 R2 and Windows 2008 R2. We also have DW images. So we have some images that have been optimized for DW. They have memory allocation set up. They have storage spaces configurations on the disk for better IOPS, for example. So if you're using DW, you can look into that. These SQL Server in Windows Azure VMs have almost 100% compatibility with what you have on-premise today. The only feature that is missing right now is SQL clusters, and that is because SQL clusters requires having shared storage, right? And that's something that is coming soon with Windows Azure. So very soon, later this year, we're going to support SQL clusters as well. And just as a consideration, you own the virtual machine, so the fact that it is hosted in the cloud doesn't change the fact that you are the full owner of the virtual machine. So Windows Azure doesn't look inside of the virtual machine for privacy reasons. But what this means is you still own patching SQL Server, you still own patching the operating system in that virtual machine, and you still own taking backups, for example, and configuring high availability for SQL Server running in that virtual machine. Any questions so far? Good? Yeah? Sure. Right. Correct. Correct. So the way, we're jumping a little bit straight, but the way that you can connect to the primary replica of an availability group, there are two ways, actually. Like, one of them is the failover partner. So this is the same thing that we used in mirroring before, where in your connection string you said, this is my server, my primary, and this is my failover partner, right? And this is the secondary. And then the connection string tries both of them, and the one that is the primary replies back, and that's the one that you connect to. So we still support that mechanism, right? It works very well, very easy, if you have only two replicas, one primary and one secondary. If you have more than two replicas, if you have three, four, five, then the failover partner doesn't work because it only supports two. So in that case, we take a dependency in the load balancer, and what we have done is, and I'm jumping a little bit here, but when you configure a Windows cluster, right, for the availability group, you can specify a port where Windows cluster will reply back to the load balancer. So only on the machine that hosts the primary replica, Windows cluster is going to reply back to that load balancer, and the load balancer is going to send all the connections there. So we're still depending on this, and this is why I said it's relevant, but Windows cluster needs to be configured so that you can play with it. Exactly, the pro port. Yeah. Any other questions? All right. So in terms of high availability, what do you get today from the platform? So if you just go and put your SQL Server in Windows Azure Virtual Machines and you don't do anything at all, what do you get? So you get some basic high availability from Windows Azure. So if the virtual machine becomes unavailable, again, every host is continuously looking at the virtual machines that it is running. If for some reason one of the virtual machines is not running, it doesn't report as running, then Windows Azure will detect that and will restart the virtual machine in a different host, right? It just moves it. And the way it moves it is all this storage is in a different place. It's in Azure storage. So all you have to do is start a different virtual machine that attaches those disks, right? And then it can continue running. From the virtual machine perspective, it looks like a restart. So similar of what happens if you power down the machine and then power it up again, right? Obviously, SQL Server will restart, and then it will go to the recovery process as it happens on-premise today. The SLA that you get today is you need to put at least two virtual machines in an availability set, and they will guarantee that maximum 22 minutes of downtime for these two virtual machines. So that means out of those two virtual machines, worst case scenario, both of them will go down maximum 22 minutes of downtime per month. Right? So this is what you get by default without having to configure anything else. Later we talk about if you configure some high availability solution for SQL, you can go a lot better than that. This SLA includes planned downtime due to monthly updates that Windows Azure does on the host. So every month we have to update the host for security reasons, for example. So it includes that. And also includes unplanned downtime due to physical failures. So if for some reason the host fails, right, and then we have to move the virtual machine, that is included as part of that. It doesn't include the servicing of the guest OS. So if you're patching your version of Windows running in that virtual machine, it's not included. And then in terms of disaster recovery, we talked about geo-replication before for the storage. So in case the Windows Azure data center goes down, and then we restart we have to restart this virtual machine in a different Windows Azure data center. That takes around 24 hours today, because that's the current number. You know, we haven't had any disasters. We hope that we won't have any disasters. But this is around the number that we can expect if we have to restart all these virtual machines in a different data center. And all this replication process of the storage between the two data centers is asynchronous, right? And this is to avoid blocking your workloads on the primary data center. So we asynchronously send all of this data to the other data side. And currently, the estimated maximum amount of data loss that you could have in case of a disaster is around 30 minutes, right? Again, once you go and configure high availability or disaster recovery for SQL, you can go above these numbers. Yes. You get notified, yes. So they send you an email. They try to send it every at least a week in advance. Sometimes it's 3 days. So it's between 3 days and 1 week, but you get notified. So if you don't enable geo-replication for your data and you don't have a SQL disaster recovery solution, you don't have a disaster recovery solution at all. So you need to at least do. Exactly, yes. So you need to explicitly go and configure geo-replication enabled. Right. Anything else? All right, let's quickly give a demo here. So for people who are not familiar with the portal, you can see all your virtual machines going here. I have 84 virtual machines running. Just very quickly, you can go and create new virtual machines by going into new virtual machine. You can go into the gallery. So you go to SQL Server. We have a lot of images available here. Right? So you can see, for example, 2014 RTM Enterprise on Windows Server 2012 R2. We recommend you to use a VM size of at least 8.3. So if you go into the next page, you can see the sizes there. So you can, first thing, you give a name to this virtual machine. So you say SQL VM, some name. You have the sizes available here. The new sizes will be shown in the portal next week. So there are actually a couple new bigger sizes, but those are only available through PowerShell. Next week, they'll be here. You can select here the number of cores and memory. Right? For example, 4 cores and 7 gigabytes of RAM. You give it a name here and a password for the administrator. And I wanted to show some of these concepts because they'll be relevant later when we talk about high availability. A couple of concepts. First one is cloud service. So the cloud service is just a container of groups of virtual machines, right? By default, you put virtual machines in the same cloud service. They can talk to each other, right? Kind of a secure boundary across those virtual machines. This is a DNS name. So this is the name that applications can use over the internet to connect to that machine. You can always close the ports if you don't want to. Where do you want to provision the virtual machine? So you have different regions, right? So you can put this in different regions around the world, or you can put this in what is called virtual networks, right? These virtual networks are similar to the virtual networks that you can create on premise, where every virtual machine that is part of a virtual network can basically TCP IP and ping to every other virtual machine as part of that network. You can create domains, Windows domains, for example, as part of that virtual network. So I have some credit here. I'll show you in the demos later how you use it. For now, let's just use a simple region. Storage account. So you can create different storage accounts. You're billed by the storage account at the end of the month, so depending on how much data you're using. So it's more of an administrative mechanism for you. You can create a new one by default if you don't have one. And this is the availability set concept that we discussed before. So if you put virtual machines in the same availability set, we will put them in different racks, right, to protect them against rack failures. And finally, what are the endpoints that you want to enable? So by default, we can connect with RDP or PowerShell, right? And then you run this. There is a bunch of extensions here. If you want to have antivirus, for example, enabled by default, you can go and do that. And then you run it. And it basically takes around 10 minutes. You know, at the end of 10 minutes, you have a virtual machine with SQL that is running, and you can RDP too. So let's jump straight into the main part of the talk. We're going to talk about high availability and disaster recovery. Right? We're going to talk about three scenarios. The first one is, if you run your SQL Server in Windows Azure Virtual Machines, how can you ensure higher levels of high availability, right? Then we'll talk about disaster recovery between Azure regions. So again, if you have your SQL Server running in one Azure data center and you want to have a SQL disaster recovery solution to another data center so that you can recover faster than 24 hours, how can you do that? And finally, probably one that is going to be very relevant to many of you, if you're in on-premise, right, and you don't plan to move into the cloud, how can you use Windows Azure as a disaster recovery solution for your SQL Server? Right? Those are the three scenarios that we're going to go into detail, and we're going to show some demos for each of them. All right, so SQL Server, high availability within one region. The first question is, why do you need to do it? I mean, the platform already provides some basic high availability. Well, the first thing is the detection that Windows Azure does for failures is at the VM only, at the VM level only. It doesn't look inside of the virtual machine for privacy reasons. So if, for example, your SQL Server service is down, is running out of memory, for example, continuously, Windows Azure will never be able to detect that. Right? That's one scenario where you may want to be able to recover from. The other thing is you own patching SQL Server in that virtual machine, and you own patching the operating system in that virtual machine. And patching those will require restarting, right? And restarting causes downtime. So if you want to avoid those, you can, you need to have a high availability technology from the SQL side. The other thing, service healing. Service healing is this process for Windows Azure to move these virtual machines across different hosts, right? That takes around 15 minutes of downtime for the virtual machine. So if your host goes down, it will take around 15 minutes for your virtual machine to come back online. And finally, every month there is an upgrade that Azure does, and this upgrade causes around 12 minutes of downtime because the host needs to restart, and then all of the virtual machines in that host need to restart. Right? So those are the reasons why you would like to have one. So what do you do? Well, you do exactly the same thing that you do today on-premise. So no big surprises here. In Windows Azure, you will have multiple virtual machines, and you can have some high availability technology where you have some primary, secondary, and then a witness, right? So you're probably familiar with this. You have seen it with database mirroring or availability groups. If for some reason SQL goes down, right, the HA technology will detect that, and then it will do a failover where the secondary becomes the primary. Eventually, the previous primary comes back online, and it becomes the secondary, and it starts resynchronizing transactions from the new primary. And the good things about this is the failure detection covers SQL Server, and the second thing is that the failover is really fast. So it takes around 10 seconds, right? Depending on the amount of workload that is active at the point of failure, this can vary, but it's going to be, you know, less than 20 seconds in the largest case of the scenarios. So obviously 10 seconds is a lot better than the 15 minutes that we discussed before, right? All right, so what solutions do we support today? Probably familiar with these two. Availability groups, people have used them so far? Yeah, some of you. Database mirroring, most of you, okay. So both of the solutions are supported. Availability groups since 2012, mirroring even in previous releases. Both of the solutions guarantee no data loss, right? You have to configure this as synchronous mode, right? This is to ensure that transactions on the primary wait until they are acknowledged by the secondaries so that they have been stored. In terms of what do you protect, with an availability group, you can protect all the databases in the instance. You can have many databases in the same availability group. With database mirroring, you can only protect one database. So if you have multiple databases, you have to set up different mirroring sessions, one for each of these databases, right? Both of them support automatic failover, right? In the case of availability groups, you need to add what is called a witness cluster, a cluster member, right? It can be a witness file share, or it can be another node. In the case of mirroring, you have to configure a witness, SQL Server witness, right? So you're probably familiar with those things. With availability groups, you get readable secondaries, right? So natively, you can go and run your read workloads on those readable secondaries. So if you have a very expensive reporting workloads, for example, you can move those into the readable secondaries. With database mirroring, you can kind of work around this. If you want, you can go and create a snapshot, for example, and then read out of the snapshots, but then you have to maintain the snapshots, so there is some management associated with that. A few other things that you get with availability groups, something called flexible failover policy. So you can specify how sensitive your SQL Server is going to be to failures. This goes from level 1 to 5. Level 1 is the SQL Server service is down, right? You cannot find the service in the list of services in Windows. To level 5, which is there are continuous out-of-memory exceptions, for example, right? So if you're running out of memory, this will automatically fail over. Even unresolved deadlocks. If there are some deadlocks that SQL Server cannot resolve, then we'll go and fail over to the other machine. Automatic page repair. SQL will automatically detect if there are some corrupted pages and will request those pages from all the secondaries in the system and will automatically replace them. You can take backups on the secondaries, and there is better manageability, so better dashboards and better X events and DMBs and all that stuff. The only consideration is with availability groups, you need to create a Windows cluster. So if you haven't done it before, Windows cluster since 2008 or 2 is a lot easier than before. I know in 2003, it wasn't as easy. It has gone a long way. 2012 is super easy to go and configure a cluster. You don't need shared storage. So all you have to do is point to the different virtual machines. Each of those machines have its own storage, and then you create a cluster, right? So no need for SANs or SMB chairs or anything like that. The other requirement is these SQL Server virtual machines need to be part of the same Windows domain, right? So you need to go and set up a domain controller if you don't have one. That make sense so far? Yeah. Very good question. In 5 or 6 slides, we'll talk about it. All right, so on-premise, you have full control of how you go and deploy these virtual machines. You know the servers. In Windows Azure, you need to give the platform some information so that it knows how to provision these virtual machines in the best configuration possible for high availability. So there are 3 concepts that are important. We look at them in the demo. First one, availability set. We talk about it. It will ensure the VMs are in different racks. It will also ensure that they're in different upgrade domains. Upgrade domain is a logical concept, and basically, if you have 2 virtual machines in the same availability set, that means that Windows Azure will only upgrade one of those at the same time, right? So it will not try to upgrade the host machines of those 2 virtual machines at the same time, right? This is to avoid running out of replicas. They put them in the same virtual network. This is to ensure that the IPs of those virtual machines never change. Right, so by default, if you don't have them in a virtual network and the VMs move to a different host, the IPs are going to change, right? And then the DNS entries are going to be updated, and there is some time associated with that. It's around 12 minutes. So until the DNS is updated in Azure, right, you won't be able to connect to that virtual machine through the name. So avoid that by putting them in the virtual network. And finally, put them in the same affinity group. The affinity group tells Windows Azure to put these virtual machines in the same cluster, right, the same physical cluster. So if you do this, you will guarantee that there is low latency between these virtual machines, which is important between primary and secondaries, right? So those concepts make sense? All right. So before you go and configure your availability group as on-premise, a couple of things that you need to be aware of. The first one is you need to create a Windows domain, right? So we'll have a lot of instructions, a good tutorial of how to set up a domain controller if you have never done it, right? And once you set up the domain controller, you can join these virtual machines to the same domain. And then the second thing you have to do is create this Windows cluster, right? There is one gotcha here, so just making sure that you're aware. Basically, when you create a cluster, right, cluster has something called the cluster network name, right? The cluster network name is a name in the network that you can use to connect to your cluster and do some management operations on the cluster, right? That network name requires having its own separate IP, right? In the case of Windows Azure today, every machine can only have a single IP address, right? So a virtual machine cannot have multiple IPs. So if you just go and try to create the cluster, it is possible that that cluster network name gets a duplicated IP, and that can cause cluster communication issues. So The workaround here is just assign some IP address to that network name that is unused in the network, right? So you can choose any IP that you have available in your Azure network, or you can simply add an IP that is always available, which is called the link local IP. This is a well-known IP address that is never used, so you can just assign that one. If you just want to forget about all of this, we actually have in Books Online a script called Create Azure Failover Cluster, and you just give it the name of the cluster, the name of the virtual machines, and it will go and create a cluster for you, so you don't even have to think about this. No yet. There's still, even if you can go and request the IP address to remain static for a long period of time, it's still a single one. So we won't have the support to have multiple assigned to the same virtual machine. So that's still going to wait. We're working into that, but probably not in the next few months. All right. So besides that, the configuration is exactly the same as you do it on-premise. So if you have used availability groups, it's going to be the same thing. We have a tutorial here. You know, when you go into the deck, I included a couple of links. So we have a nice tutorial here that shows, you know, how to create this configuration, and it includes everything from setting up the domain controller to setting up availability groups and all that. So at this point, let me go and show you a demo of this. So first, let's go back to the Windows Azure portal, right? So I'm selecting here the virtual machines that I'm going to use in the demos. So I have four virtual machines. Right now, we're going to use this one, and this one, right? So all of these three virtual machines are in the same region. They're in central US, right? If we select one of these virtual machines, right, and we go into configure, you'll see some information about these virtual machines. So the first one is, you know, it has 8 cores, 14 gigabytes of RAM. They are part of one availability set, right? We talk about this concept, very important concept. And see, we have three virtual machines as part of the same set, right? So we have HD region 1, VM1, VM2, and then the witness. Now, if we connect to one of these virtual machines, actually, let me just show this. This is the domain controller. So for people who, you know, haven't been using domain controllers lately, this is just another virtual machine in Windows Azure that I configure as a domain controller. I can see all of those virtual machines that I show you in the portal, that they are part of the same Windows domain. Right? So the domain is called corp, corpcontoso.com. If I go into one of the SQL VMs, so we actually have two SQL VMs as part of this configuration. So this is one, this is HGA region VM1. You can see that at the top, right? You can see that this is running in Azure. You have the full DNS name of Azure. So the first thing is I can see that I have an availability group already created, right? This availability group has three replicas. Right now, we're going to be using these two. For the next demo, we're going to be using the last one. And then you can see that the availability group that these two replicas are configured for automatic failover, so that in case that SQL Server goes down in one of these virtual machines, we'll automatically fail over to the other machine. So, for example, if the virtual machine goes down, we'll fail over to the other one. Right? And there is always some information here about, you know, what was the last time that they committed a transaction, what was the last transaction in the log that they committed, et cetera. And this is how much log, in terms of kilobytes, they're sending from primary to secondary. So if we go into Windows Cluster, for people who are familiar with Windows Cluster, this is how the configuration looks like. Right? So we have the name of the cluster, right, as part of this domain, and then we have the four nodes, right? Now, if you're familiar with Cluster Quorum, right, how you configure Cluster Quorum, this is a nodes-only configuration. So I'm not using a witness vulture. I'm just using three virtual machines. So the virtual machines that have boats are these three, right? This, this, and this. So these two have SQL Server, and this one is just a witness, right? And this is to guarantee that I have quorum. Quorum means that at all the scenarios, you need to maintain two out of three virtual machines running, and this guarantees that there is always agreement on who the primary is. So this guarantees that you won't have two subsets, right, of virtual machines that they believe they are the primary, so avoids split brain scenarios. And then in terms of the roles, you know, this is the availability group that we just look in SQL. This is just another service that Windows Cluster is protecting. I think that is the only thing that I wanted to show here. So imagine, for example, that you want to go and patch SQL. So you will do a rolling upgrade, or sorry, rolling patching process as you do on-premise today. So for example, I will go and patch my secondary first, right? I have my secondary here, H region 1 VM2. And after I patch, I can right-click on the availability group and say, I want to fail over. Right? It's the same exact experience as you have it today. And then I can say, finish. And this will go and fail over between one VM and another VM, right? And the failover process takes around 10 seconds, so very fast. And now this one becomes my primary, right? And the other one becomes my secondary. Something that I didn't show you is I actually have a workload that is continuously running. So this workload is inserting a record in one table, right? It has some increased number here. This is the name of the primary. So you can see the name of the primary changed when I did the failover. So it's always connecting to the primary. And this is the time when it inserted the record. The other thing is these machines are configured as readable secondaries. So if you look into properties, we see readable secondary, yes, for all of those. And what this means is that I can actually use any of those machines to query my data. So I can use the other one, for example, and I can continue querying my data. So if you have some reporting applications, you could use this. Yeah. Right. Yes, it's exactly the same concept. You still need to have some third member that is able to agree on who the primary is. The implementation of that member is different. In the case of database mirroring, the witness was SQL Server itself. So you needed to install SQL Server and configure it as a witness. In the case of availability groups, it can be one of two things. It can be just another Windows machine without SQL, right? And you just configure that as a cluster member. Or you can use a witness file share. So you can create just a file share anywhere in any machine, and you can just use that file share as a witness. So the other virtual machines will try to continuously read from that file share. In case that they cannot read, they consider that that member is down. Exactly. So if you want to save money, the best way of saving money is actually to put your witness file share in the domain controller, for example. So you use a single machine for domain controller and witness file share, right? And then you can run with three machines only. Does that make sense so far? All right. So let's talk about DR between Azure regions, right? Why will you want to do this? Again, the platform already provides some basic DR functionality. Well, the first thing is, if that functionality is not good enough for you, so if you need to recover before 24 hours, or you cannot allow 30 minutes of downtime, sorry, of data loss. The other reason is, if your virtual machines stripe files across multiple drives. So if, for example, you're striping between data and log files across multiple drives, then Azure Regio replication is not supported today. And the reason is Azure Regio replication replicates every drive independently of each other, and this replication is asynchronous. So what can happen is, at the point of a disaster, the state of each of those drives on the other data center may be different, right, at that point in time. SQL by default requires that the log is written before the data, right? So this is a write-ahead log, so we need to be able to recover transactions from that log. Bad things happen if you write to data before log, right? So you may not be able to recover when the SQL Server service restarts. So because of that reason, if you're striping data or log files, that is not supported with your replication. In that case, you will need a SQL Server disaster recovery technology. Right? And the other thing is, many customers want to have this ability to test disaster recovery every time they want to be able to verify that applications can continue running in case of a disaster, and they want to be able to decide when to do disaster recovery. They don't want the platform to decide. So this is another reason why you will want to have this. Make sense? So how does that look like? Well, you will go and configure, again, some SQL disaster recovery technology, across different Azure regions, right? So you could have your primary running on East US and then your secondary running on West US. So what to do? Well, the first thing is we are finishing this. This is actually new. This is coming in June. I'll tell you what can you do if you cannot wait until next month. But for now, starting next month, we're going to support availability groups between different Azure regions, right? And we're also going to support log shipping, right? So for people who are familiar with log shipping, we're going to support it across regions as well. In terms of data loss and automatic failover, I often get the question if you can ensure this across different regions. The short answer is yes, you can. However, there is a caveat, right, and you need to be aware of that. The caveat is if you have high network latency between these two regions, for example, because they are in different parts of the states, right, in opposite sides, that means that every transaction that you try to commit on the primary will have to wait until that transaction is stored on the secondary. Right? So you need to wait all that round trip from the secondary side. So most customers do not want to wait. They don't want to impact that. So they actually configure this secondary as asynchronous so that they don't impact the transaction on the primary. An automatic failover, yes, you could if you want to configure automatic failover between the regions. The only consideration is this is only allowed in synchronous replicas. Right? So only if you're okay with adding additional transaction overhead on the primary, this will work. If not, then you'll have to do manual failover in case of a disaster. Make sense? All right, so what do you have to do? So again, the only thing, additional thing that you have to do besides what you do today, which is just adding the replica on, as you do it on-premise, is you need to set up a secure site-to-site tunnel between the two regions, right? So in this case, we have two regions, West US and Japan East, for example, and then each of these regions has a virtual network, right? So all you have to do is configure a site-to-site tunnel between those two networks. Again, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail of how to configure it. We have a very nice tutorial, so please just go into the link, right, and you can look into how to configure. But basically, all you have to do is create certificates on both sides, right, and then you change the public key of those certificates, and that's how they can create an IPsec tunnel between them, and then you can do pings, for example, between them. All right, so this is the demo that I'm going to show in a couple of minutes. So I have, this is the primary and secondary that I just showed you in the previous demo. They are in one virtual network called contoso.net, right? And I have my Active Directory domain controller that I show you. And then I have another region in West US, and I'm going to add another replica there, right? And this replica is in a different virtual network called HWListNet. And this is possible because I have configured the site-to-site tunnel. So all this traffic between the replicas is going to go through the tunnel, and also any traffic from Active Directory or the domain controller is going to go through the tunnel as well, right? So for example, if I want to authenticate any connections here using Windows authentication, this will go and go to Active Directory here. If you want to avoid any latency by not going to all the way to here, you can always add a replica of Active Directory of the domain controller running on this side. So something else that you can do. So let's go back to the availability group. So let's see what I want to show. Okay, so I have my availability group here. Let me show the dashboard. This is the one that we just used in the previous demo. Now, the new replica that I'm going to show is this one, HA region 2. Right? This is in HA region 2, VM1. And this is configured for a manual failover because I don't want to impact transactions on the primary. This is configured as readable. So I can go into the Windows Azure portal, right? And then I can show you the tunnel. So all you have to do is go into networks. So you have to go into networks right here. And then in networks, I see I have my Contoso 2 net virtual network. This is the one that has my primary and secondary locally, right? So you can see I have my H1 region 1 BM2 and H1 region 1 BM2. I also have my domain controller there, and I have the witness that we look at, right? Now, you can see that I have configured this side-to-side tunnel, right, between this virtual network and this other virtual network, HWListNet, right? And then, what else I want to show here? I think that's it. There's always information about how much data you're sending over the network here. If we go back to my virtual machines, here, right, you can see that I have the other machine here. You can look at the locations of this one. So the first three are in central US, right, and the final one is in west US. So if I go to SQL now, right, I go to the SQL, the Windows cluster first, you see that I have this other machine in the other network, right? You notice that I have removed the boat out of it. And the reason is, we always give the best practice of removing boats from machines that are not part of your local network. And this is to avoid failures, connectivity failures to that machine impacting the quorum of your local cluster. Right? So this is why I have removed it. The remaining three nodes have boats. I can go into SQL. You see that I have the virtual machine that is synchronizing. I can ping, for example, machines from the primary. So if I ping the local secondary, you see the latency is less than 1 millisecond. If I ping the machine on the other data center, you see the latency grows to 43, 45 milliseconds, right? So things to consider. Now, I can go into this machine and just query it. So if you want to have some applications reading on the other side of the states, for example, right, and you don't want to go all the way back to your primary, you can just go and read from them. So I can just copy this, you know, and exactly the same query that I had before. You know, I can run it. It's basically, you see, the number is continuously increasing as well, right? So you can have all these readable secondaries around the world, allowing these read workloads to be running your data, right, as close as your applications are. In the case that there is a disaster, let's say at this point my primary and secondary go down, I can always go into my other region, connect to my availability group, and say failover. And again, the same experience that we had before will allow me to failover to a different region. In this case, we'll ask you to confirm it, because if this is an asynchronous secondary, there may be some data loss. You can look at how much data loss in the dashboard by looking at when was the last time that it committed a transaction and the last transaction that it committed. Once you're okay to do the failover, you can click next and finish. And again, less than 10 seconds, you will be able to fail over to a different region and continue running, right? Any questions? Yeah. Yeah. Right. So the question was, in this case, you only have a single machine on the other data center, so you are running exposed in case of you fail over there. So what you can do in advance is, instead of having a single replica, you can add two or three on the other data center. So by the time that you fail over, all of those replicas will automatically start synchronizing to the new primary on the other side. So you can always add as many replicas as you want. In SQL 2012, we support 5 replicas, right? 1 primary and 4 secondaries. SQL 2014, we support 9 replicas, 1 primary and 8 secondaries. So you can always. Obviously, there's additional cost if you have all those replicas running in all these data centers. So if you want to avoid cost, you could have a single replica running on the other side, and as soon as you fail over, start adding the other 2 replicas on that side, right? So you can save some money there. All right, so let's jump into the final scenario. This is disaster recovery between on-premise and Microsoft Azure. So why will you want to do this? So there are events that can cause your SQL Server, and more than SQL Server, you know, Active Directory, websites, et cetera, to become unavailable. This can be just temporary things. It can be a failure in your gateway, right? So you cannot connect to your CorpNet environment. It could be a failure in your ISP provider, for example. You lose connectivity to the outside world. Or it could be more permanent failures, like flooding, for example. So this one is actually, you probably know this one, Hurricane Sandy, right? So I actually had to be involved with Stack Overflow. Anybody familiar with stackoverflow.com? No. It's a site that, you know, you can go and ask any questions about software development or DBA administration, and people will reply back, right? It's a repository of answers. They also offer careers now, so you can go and put your CV and companies will, you know, contact you and all that. So Stack Overflow is actually it's located in New York. They have their primary data center there. So when Hurricane Sandy hit them, they actually lost power in the data center. They have a power, additional power generator, but the power generator was running low. They had like 20 hours total. Hurricane Sandy was not going to be done in 20 hours. So the good news is they had availability groups. They have the disaster recovery site in Oregon. So they were able to just fail over to Oregon and continue running without issues, right? Some other companies were not as happy. There are actually photos of a few companies lifting servers, for example, because they were flooding and they were trying to avoid them from being, you know, getting wet. So you can imagine like those things actually happen. Disaster recovery sites are expensive. So you need to pay for the rent of the site. You need to pay for some maintenance of that site. Some hardware, you need to have some servers there, and some people that are operating the site. So some customers can afford it, many customers cannot. So what can you do? So what you can do is configure a disaster recovery technology between your on-premise site and Microsoft Azure. Right? So in this case, for example, you have your main site, you have your primary and secondary, so you have high availability. And now if you want to have disaster recovery, you can add one or more replicas in Windows Azure. Right? Again, nothing new. What technologies you can use? The same technologies that you have been using in the past. So you can use availability groups, or you could use log shipping, right? Same as before. With availability groups, you get a few nice things. So you have integrated HADR. So in the availability groups, you can have your local replica for high availability plus your remote replica for disaster recovery, and you can manage them in a single place. Right? You have the dashboard, you have your T-SQL to manage a single concept. You can move read workloads to Azure. So if you already have that replica running in Azure, you may as well use it, for example, for reporting. So you have some reporting applications, you can do that. You can move backups. So you can actually take backups on those secondaries. So this, besides all the backups that you take locally, you know, you may want to have copies on the remote side for compliance reasons. So, you know, worst case scenario, you have a disaster on premise, you want to go back on time for some reason, you need some backups to be available outside of your data center. So it's another way that you can do it, just taking these backups on the secondaries. Again, the same recommendation, or not recommendation, the same need, you need Windows cluster, right? Somebody was asking about how do you do this, and I'll show you that in the demo. These machines, these replicas in the cloud, need to be part of the same Windows cluster as the machines on-premise, right? And because of that, they need to be part of the same Windows domain, right? We'll talk about how do you configure that in a second. What are the benefits that you get if you go and do that today? The first thing is you have flexibility on when these replicas are located. So we have many regions available today in the US, Europe, and Asia. We're releasing new regions, you know, every couple of months. So, you know, at some point we'll have regions in Australia and Brazil and all these places. So you can always put the replicas in the closest location where you want them. Political considerations: some customers do not want their data, for example, to leave Asia, or they don't want them to leave Europe. So based on that, you can put it in the right region. As we talked about it before, we guaranteed no data loss. So once your transactions make it into that replica in Windows Azure, we already have three copies locally, and potentially if you configure your application, three more copies remotely, so your data is safe, right, at that point. Secure, so all the communication between these replicas is encrypted, right, so you can use just Windows authentication, and then based on the domain accounts, we encrypt the channel, or you can use certificate-based authentication between these replicas. In both cases, all the communication is secure. It is low cost, so you don't have to go and set up the disaster recovery site. You don't have to buy servers. all you need to do is provision a virtual machine and pay for the cost of that virtual machine and the storage that it is using. And again, all the traffic that you send into the cloud is free. So if you're sending transactions all the week, you know, 24/7, you don't pay for that. Make sense? All right, so the question before, how can I go and add my replicas in the cloud to my on-premise cluster? So you need to configure what is called a site-to-site tunnel, very similar to what we look between the Azure regions, where you have to do it between your on-premise environment and Windows Azure. Just to give you an idea, again, we have a nice tutorial here. I'm trying to give you all these scenarios. Going through all of these configurations obviously will take a lot of time. But if you look into here, I will show you how to configure this tunnel using Windows Server RAS. So you don't need to go and configure Cisco or anything like that. Just any machine that is running Windows Server 2012 can act as your VPN device. And we have all the information here. Basically, a couple of things that you need to do. The first one is you need to give the IP address of your DNS, your Active Directory Domain Controller on-premise. And this is because those machines in the cloud need to be able to join the domain and authenticate against that domain. And the second thing that you need to do is give a name to your local network. Once you give a name to your local network, you can basically create this tunnel between that local network, which is using some on-premise Active Directory Domain Controller, and a virtual network in Windows Azure. So a couple of steps. You go into the portal. Again, you fill these values. It will create a script, right? It's just a PowerShell script. That script will contain a public key, right? And then you need to go and run that script into your RAS machine. So the machine that is running routing and remote access services, you run that script, and it will set up the tunnel for you using that certificate that it downloaded. So once you have the tunnel, that machine in the cloud is addressable as any other machine on-prem. You can ping to it, you can RDP, you can join it to your on-premise domain, and you can join it to the on-premise cluster. So let me show you an example. So I have my on-premise environment. Right? This is actually running in Redmond at Microsoft. And then I have my domain controller, right, my DNS server running there. I have configured a tunnel to central US, right? And then as part of that, I have added a secondary replica here to my availability group, right? And again, all the traffic between those replicas and all the DNS and Active Directory traffic will go through there as well. Right. So let me show this one. Let's just connect to this one. Any questions so far? All these connects? No? Make sense? Should I have my, just taking a little bit of time. All right, so again, availability groups. We're looking at a lot of availability groups today. So I have one availability group, right? I have two replicas. One is on-premise and one is in Azure. I'll actually show you the one in Azure in the portal. And they are protecting one database, right? If you want to protect more databases, you just add them to the availability group. And then I have configured this as synchronous, right? I know I recommended you asynchronous. In this case, you know, my workload is not big enough. I'm okay with, you know, a little bit of added latency on the primary, so I can do this. So if I go to Azure, and I look for that virtual machine. So it's demo, Azure VM1, right? I can look into that virtual machine and see if there's anything exciting. So a couple of things that will be useful. It has a DNS name. So if you want to go and read your data over the internet, if you want to allow people to, you know, run some application connected over the internet, you can do it with a DNS name. If you don't want to, you can just close the ports on the firewall. There is actually a public endpoint that you can close so that you don't access it over the internet, and you can only access it over the tunnel, for example, if you want to. The other thing that I wanted to show is this part. Look into location. So the location here is not directly the region. It's not just central US as the one that we looked at before. This actually specified the name of a virtual network called CH1 VNet VMMM02. So if we go into networks, so we go into the networks, and we look into this one, right? Let's look into the details. You will look that this is a site-to-site tunnel between my on-premise environment in Redmond, Washington, to this Azure region in central US, right? So again, we're talking about, this is the name of my local network, right? I have the name of my virtual network on Windows Azure, and I have configured the tunnel. What else is important here to look at? Let's see, configure. So in configure, it will show me the name of the domain controller, the IP of the domain controller. So all of these are things that you set when you configure this tunnel in the portal. Okay, it's taking a little bit of time. So let's go into SQL again. So I'm in SQL here. What I can do at this point is I can go into my readable secondary in the cloud. Right, so you can see. This is connecting to that machine, demo Azure VM1. So I can go and read any values there, right? So nothing too exciting. I can go to my primary replica, right? Insert additional values, right? Take a little bit of time, and then they are automatically replicated into my machine in the cloud. So anything that you do on-premise gets replicated there. So imagine that, for example, you want to have some dev test environments as well. Some tester, some developers want to have access to a copy of the data, but you don't want them to have access to the primary data. You could have a read copy, for example, in the cloud, and they could do something like that. Just thinking of other scenarios of how could you do this. At this point, let's say that your primary replica goes down. There is a disaster. Let's go actually into the replica in the cloud. All you have to do is connect to the replica in the cloud, right? Again, right-click on the availability group, failover. I think, as you can see, it's exactly the same user interface, no matter what combination you're using, what configuration. So the good news is you don't have to learn anything new. So if you do this between two replicas on-premise or two replicas in the cloud or between on-premise and the cloud, it's exactly the same configuration, right? So hopefully you can see, you know, how much power you have in your hands with this. At this point, you know, the failover completes. I think the UI is still cleaning a little bit. But you can see that the primary, you know, has changed, and now the machine that I have on-premise is my secondary, and the machine that I have in the cloud is my primary. Right? Any questions so far? By the way, talking about client reconnection, because we're talking about how clients can reconnect. So if you only have two replicas, again, failover partner will work, just as with mirroring, very easy in the connection string. If you have three replicas, because you have one local secondary, right, and then another secondary in the cloud, then failover partner will not work. And in that case, you will need to use the listener, right, as we talked about it before. All right, at this point, I wanted to talk about some customers. So we have been supporting these scenarios for almost a year now. We have some customers that are using it. So just giving you some ideas of who these customers are and how they're using it. So we're going to talk about a car manufacturer, an online travel firm, an online video streaming company, and a healthcare provider. So car manufacturer Toyota, they have a web portal, gazoo.com. This portal provides some news, blogs, communities, games, etc. This is for Toyota-related information, so you can go and buy cars there. This is targeted to the Asian market. And they have a configuration running SharePoint 2013, and they have SQL Server 2012, and these are running in Microsoft Azure, right? So, well, for them, high availability is important because if the site goes down, if SharePoint goes down, people are not able to buy, for example, or sell cars, right? So they wanted to be able to maintain that. So all they have done is add a secondary in the same Azure region for this. This is one example. Another example, an online travel firm. They have an online travel reservation system. This is a European firm. They still are on premise, right? They are somewhere in Amsterdam, in Europe. And they wanted to have a disaster recovery solution, right? And they didn't want to have to buy or build a new disaster recovery site. So all they did is they expanded their availability group, which already have one local secondary, to Microsoft Azure, right? So it's actually running in North Europe, right? And they have a disaster recovery site. So another example. An online video streaming company. So this is the equivalent of Netflix in England. They're now moving into Europe. And they have this organizational strategy of moving to the cloud. So they're moving the full infrastructure into the cloud. You know, SQL Server, the media services, the websites, everything is moving there. Business continuity is critical for customer satisfaction, right? Customers want to be able to sign, join the site, for example. They want to be able to watch movies, et cetera. So they want to be able to maintain that level of support. So they have an availability group that provides high availability within one region. They are in West Europe. And then they wanted to have a disaster recovery solution. When they moved into Azure around 5 months ago, we still didn't support availability groups across regions. So what they did is they kept a local replica in their on-premise environment for disaster recovery purposes, right? Now that we support availability groups, or will support next month between regions, they're going to move this into North Europe, right, in Azure. All right. Final one is a healthcare provider. So there is a system, an online system that maintains operations for a hospital. This is in the US. For hospitals, they have this compliance with HIPAA. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Some security compliance on how you manage data. So Azure is compliant with HIPAA, so they actually move their online system into Windows Azure, into central US. And for them, business continuity is critical to their business, right? So this hospital has many operations that depend on the site being available. So what they do is they have a local availability group in central US, right, in Azure, and this provides high availability. And they kept an on-premise replica. And this is for two reasons. One is for reporting. So they want to be able to create reports locally, right? And the other reason is for regulatory reasons. So some hospitals, for example, need to maintain a copy of the data locally for compliance. So this is how they did it. Any questions so far? All right, so in terms of resources, anything related to SQL Server high availability disaster recovery, all of these scenarios that we went through before today, they're in a single site. So just click here, and this site will guide you through, you know, why do you need high availability or disaster recovery, the different scenarios that we talked about before, the different technologies. We'll guide you through all of that. And on the left side, we have tutorials for all of these features. So, for example, you can look at how to configure availability groups in Windows Azure. Right? We have tutorials for PowerShell, in case you want to use PowerShell. We have information for database mirroring. In case you want to use database mirroring, and we have information for log shipping as well. I have 6 minutes. Have you seen the wizard that we added in SQL Server 2014 for adding replicas in Windows Azure? Who has seen it already? No? Okay, only one person. So I have 6 minutes. I think we can show that in the demo. So this is the thing that we just released in SQL Server 2014. So, again, let me go back to on-premise. Remember, this is the availability group where I have a replica on-premise and in the cloud. So I'm going to go back on-premise. I'll have my primary running there. And then I'll show you a wizard that we added in SQL Server 2014. Okay, so it's complete. So I have my primary here. So if you add a replica today, on-premise, you click this button, Add Replica. That allows you to add a replica there, right? The same exact interface has been extended now to support Azure. So This is the button that we have today. So you want to add a local replica, you can click on that button. In SQL 2014, we added this new button called Add Azure Replica, right? So if you click this button, this will bring this experience, which is very similar to the experience in the portal that I show you, right? Where you can select the image of the VM that you want, the size of the virtual machine, give a name to the administrator, et cetera. So what we have done is really integrate all that experience into SQL Server, so you don't even have to go and think about Windows Azure concepts. Like, we're trying to expose those through your familiar SQL Server experience. By the way, if you have access to Management Studio, now we're starting to make this available as a separate download, Management Studio. You can use this against SQL Server 2012. Right? So you can download this Management Studio and use the wizard against any existing 2012 configuration. So I can select, for example, the image that I want. I'm going to say I want 2014 Enterprise on Windows 2012 R2. I want a large virtual machine for cores. I'm going to give a name to this virtual machine. Let's say my Azure replica. And then a name to the administrator and a password. Right. Here is the tunnel. So remember, we talk about configuring the tunnel. So he will show me any tunnels that I have available between my on-premise environment and Azure. So in this case, I have one configured to Central US. I'm going to use that one. And finally, it will ask me about a domain account that has permissions to add machines to the domain. Right? So I'm going to give it the name of my domain account and password. It will do some validations, right? My password is wrong. You can verify that it does some validations. Let's see. Hope I didn't forget my password. And after the validations, you will be able to specify how to move the data between on-premise and the cloud. So we support different ways of how you can move your data. Just copy my password. Or funny story, the other day at the keynote, we actually showed the password of one of the Microsoft accounts. So people were not happy, like in 5 minutes, we have to go and change all these passwords. So I learned from that. Actually, I didn't do it. I learned from that, so this is why I'm trying something else. Just gonna copy the password and then show it. So that wasn't very funny. Okay, so. Hopefully we're back on business here. Let's see if this password works. Ah, it works. Okay, so I'll show you the legal terms for SQL Server, because you're going to have a SQL Server now running in the cloud. You can see the replica in the cloud has been added here as a secondary. I can specify if I want it to be readable. So I have to say yes, readable, yes. Just by doing this, you'll have a copy in the cloud that is readable for your data. And then I specify how do I want to move my data into the cloud. By default, it is through a full backup, right? So you specify some chair where you have the full backup, and then we'll take it from there. This works very well if it's, you know, less than 2 terabytes. I mean, you can leave it running for some hours. If it's more than that, we have a service in Windows Azure called the import service. So you can actually send a physical drive encrypted with a BitLocker, and you can send it through UPS to Windows Azure. We get a backup from you, and then we can restore it into one of these machines so that you have a replica available. But again, the smaller sizes, you can just use the wizard. And at this point, basically, the wizard will go and do a bunch of validations for you. So you don't have to think about any of these things. You know, the wizard will think for you. If there is some failures, the wizard will retry. Basically, you know, after this point, executing the wizard will take around 12, 13 minutes. It's 10 minutes for provisioning the virtual machine, plus some time to restore the backup. How much time depends on the size of the backup. But basically, this gives you the idea. At the end of the wizard, it will start running. You know, at the end of the wizard, you'll have the replica in the cloud. So really trying to simplify this story of disaster recovery for on-premise customers. Any questions so far? So Thanks a lot for your time. If you have any questions, I'm going to be available, and I hope that you enjoy the rest of the day.